everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Heretic Hammer Podcast. I am your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
And you know, I mentioned it two episodes ago now, that our next-ish episode, I actually kind of cut it out of that episode, but you know what? I wrote it in here, so here we are, would be about Gundam. And so here we are. In this episode, we're going to talk about the Jagged Doga and why aren't there more Bird Gundam?
That's close enough to a Zaku. Absolutely.
I mean, Neo Zeon, right?
What's up?
It's Neo Zeon. They technically are Zaku that they use in Neo Zeon.
Mm-hmm.
But today, we're going in on Tau battle suits.
Love it. Super excited for this.
Yeah. So now I think you will have a, now you get the joke. The joke is clear. But yes, today we're going to talk a little bit about some Tau battle suits. The first thing I want to actually remember, though, or I want to test, if you will. What are kind of some of the things that you remember about the Tau battle suits?
I remember that they were very sleek. Most of them are bipedal. They had legs with which to walk around on. And they remind me a lot of Pat Labor, which was a immediate plus for what I was interested in.
Yes, that is not a, that was not a, that definitely wasn't something that I knew anything about before our Gundam episode. Our first Gundam episode. When you showed me that picture, I was like, yeah, okay, I see it. I definitely see it.
I see the vision.
And actually, honestly, what that really made me think, I was like, oh my God. Because here's the thing, right? The common joke, I mean, you see this in fiction and literature all the time, you know, but like, obviously there's the joke that, you know, GW doesn't come up with anything like of their own. Everything is a copy of something. But I mean, like, man, you look at some of these Tau battle suits and you look at that Pat Labor and you're like, huh. I think somebody, we thought there was a weeb at GW some time ago when they decided that they were going to come up with the Tau. I think they were a deeper weeb than we thought. Because I think it might not be Gundam inspired. I think it might be.
It's hard to say for certain because you definitely hit a point early on, especially in the late 80s, where it's like there's only so many really like humanoid mecha designs that you can do and so many things you can do to sort of accentuate them and give them like unique features before you're just going to kind of see that overlap anyhow. Warhammer 40K starts in like 87, right? Is when it was like first starting to get published.
I mean, yeah, but Tau came out third edition, I believe. So let's see.
Because Pat Labor starts around like 87, 88.
Right. But when did third edition launch? Third edition came out in 1998. And I believe then that would be around when the Tau were released. Because I mean, correct me in the comments if I'm wrong, obviously, because I'm very much going on this from like just general like knowledge and reminding. But like, as far as I've always known that the Tau started third edition. So yeah, 98 okay. would have been then the Tau release.
Gotcha.
So very much plausible then to have somebody who was an anime fan and, you know, especially back then, you know, when what anime you found, whatever, was obviously very dependent. But clear, I feel like it's very clear somebody in England might have been a bit of a fan.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. But so I guess, yeah, anything else that you kind of remember factoid wise about the battle suits?
I remember, putting me on the spot here. Try to remember his name. He has the red, specifically the red battle suit.
Commander Farsight.
Commander Farsight. I loved everything to do with him. Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk a little bit, not maybe about his suit per se, but like the suit that his is based on.
Okay. Gotcha.
But those are all very good. So, but you know, we'll start off. So, I mean, obviously kind of what we had were, what we went over was the fact that there are stealth, kind of standard, and then commander, and then the larger, like, artillery-esque battle suits. And then the main other fact about these is that these, anybody who pilots a suit were once, or technically still are, fire warriors, but like the baseline, which was the Shasla, and they passed a trial by fire, and now, after 4 years of, so first the 4 years, and then trial by fire, are now able to pilot one of these battle suits. And the thing to kind of remember about it being 4 years, because, I mean, in 40K, especially like if you're just man in 40K, you know, that, or alien or whatever, you know, if you're just a simple person, being, yeah. If you're just being in 40K, you're not likely often to last very long on the battlefield, right? Your chances are pretty against you. But you also need to remember that Tau lives are fairly short. They're, you know, maybe even just barely, I think it was like, I don't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but it was something like 20, 30 years. So they're not long lifespans outside of like ethereals. And so 4 years and surviving 4 years means that you've done pretty good for yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
So the trial itself is dependent on the sept, which are the worlds and systems that are individually governed. So obviously there is like the Tau and the Tau Empire, but then like each planet may have like a sept. So like a specific governing body that creates kind of its own culture and influence upon the world itself. But it does otherwise kind of, it is otherwise just kind of like a monitored, but otherwise like a tricky battle, but it's like you're sent against a creature or you're sent in with a squad against a creature, but like you'll get less than the standard support. There's not a lot to like how the trial by fire works, but like it's kind of themed seemingly kind of more around this concept of just like you are getting put in a rough scenario. How are you going to survive? And you very much can die and will very much be able to die during these trial by fires. They're not just like simulations. They're true trials by fire.
Okay.
They mean it.
Stakes are real.
Yeah. And thus, so let's talk about piloting the suit itself. So, you know, pilots connect through their suit through a Neuralink monofilament needle connected at the back of the head to the brain. Part of the, you know, this is kind of, yeah, like Pacific Rim-esque, but like
drift, it's funny. Compatibility, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's actually kind of funny because when I wrote this, the sports, you know, at my job, the sports TV from whatever they were recording, like whatever sports thing that they were rolling on. Had Pacific Rim on it.
Nice.
And I saw like, and then I saw this like, I, you know, I saw this when looking stuff up and I'm like, oh shit. Except there was Pacific Rim 2, so it was the less good one.
Oh.
Yeah.
We don't talk about that.
Less nice. But yeah, so part of it similarly though is that then the damage to armor does get transmitted to the pilot as like a form of sympathetic pain. However, this isn't obviously because they don't want them to be like distracted and like potentially like it's not good if like the, you know, they take a big anti-tank shot and all of a sudden, you know, they're writhing in pain. That doesn't do them any well. So it's more like a nagging pain, like something to like remind them and make them aware, like, this really got hit, you know? Or like, hey, something's poking at you from the back if it's just like regular bullets.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, if anything, the most it gets is maybe to like my back or shoulder pain at the end of a work day.
You know? It's almost like a, it's almost like a slightly more intrusive, like force feedback vest.
Yeah.
That people wear.
Yeah. It's, and it's like, if anything, it's
the feeling.
Yeah. Maybe it's like the equivalent if like that force feedback vest gave you like a little shock.
Yeah. Just like put a little taser in there.
It's just like, ah, shit. Like when the little like, what is it? It's like the ab thing, you know?
Oh yeah. The ab
where it shocks thing. You. This does also mean, though, that the anti-tampering systems in these suits are pretty dang good, you know, from all up on the scale. You know, if you enter this suit and it does not hit the correct brainwave, it will not go well. So unless you are the pilot, if I had to guess, probably some engineers, I imagine there's, you know, there's technically probably multiple people who have like that kind of genetic accessibility or brainwave accessibility put into the suit. But like, for example, you know, when an Imperial attempted to take a battle suit to assassinate Commander Brightsword, who is like one of the top people for Farsight, they were instead fried to a charred corpse. So
yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, so do not attempt a GTA on the suit. It does not go well. Thing plugs into the back of your mind and is just like, ah, time to set this to fry. So yeah, bad move. Don't do it.
I mean, it makes sense though too that these battle suits are such a like integral part of the Tau military force that they would need to be as protective of it as possible. You don't want to just have people constantly stealing these battle suits and using them against them.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Especially given that while the Imperium may not necessarily always want to use these things for themselves, again, yeah, if some commander or somebody was like, this is my one chance to escape, I got to take this battle suit out of this prison, here we go. They're like, nah, no. So, battle suits are classified first by their class. So the first suits that were ever made were T-Series, and they were powered by fossil fuels. Then there were V-Series, which used fission reactors. And now they're on X-Series. So kind of at the beginning of every name, which you can see on this picture here, you can kind of see like everything has like X blank. Now the first V series, so like just V series, they had the slight issue with radiation poisoning and the pilot. So they didn't last super long in these suits. But the X series has generally resolved this, seemingly. Like there is no reported real like main issue with this, supposedly. And so, but you'll kind of see then it's still why most suits have XV on their like as a moniker, because they still use fission power. It's just kind of the whole setup and its usage is done better.
Okay.
There's a ballistic suits, which are the ones that are like really big and like super artillery and everything. They seem to use the K moniker instead of X, but I couldn't find any sources to state like, yes, that is for sure the thing, that it's just K is for big ballistic suits, or like, you know, because seemingly they're still like KV, so like seemingly they're powered the same still. But like I said, yeah, it's the only type of suit that uses this, and it's really only two suits, so you know. Baby. Otherwise, ranks do end up kind of being seen on the helmets of battle suits. These often will vary based on the sept, but often, especially for GW paint and codex purposes, they kind of follow this paradigm. So Shasui, so the first, you know, you can get into a pilot, you can get into a battle suit, you know, that's the first rank you need to have to battle suit up. They will have a majority, you know, the majority of the head color will be the, you know, will be the, like, the Bane armor color. And then the Sept color will be the accent. And then, like, they'll have one colored sensor vein. So, like, kind of looking... These mostly are a little bit tough because a lot of these are seemingly going to be more than just being Shasui. But, like, kind of the stealth battle suit might be a semi-decent example where it's kind of all in that maroon red. And then the Sept color would be that orange on the shoulder. So if it was, if, you know, so, like, for example, if you applied that over to the one next to the right of it, you know, it would have an all yellow head. And then part of its vein, like the antenna on it, would have the either the white or like have like one little stripe down parts of the like going down the head in that yellow color or in the white color. Sorry. And then Shasvrei have the whole head in the Sept color, which you pretty much can see in then the yellow one here. Technically it has one of the sensor veins with a bit of the armor color, but the idea is that the whole head, if it's a whole head white, in this case, like whole head, you know, secondary color, no striping or marking or anything like that, then that means they're Shasvrei.
Oh.
And then, yeah. And then Shas L is all the Sept color except the sensor vein. So if you look at the Enforcer battle suit, you'll kind of see where, like, you know, there it's all in the Sept color, but the sensor veins have some of that yellow on it.
Yeah, the little yellow at the top. Yeah.
Yes. And then Shasso, which is the kind of highest one you're going to get to, is all Sept color, but they just have accents on the helmet. So technically the broadside kind of might have that where that's all the Sept color, but then, you know, it'll just have, like, if anything, maybe a stripe going down the helmet that's like the white or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all colored except for, like, wherever the stripes come in, whether it's like one or two, again, depends on the Sept and the, like, planet that they, and like the governance setup. But let's talk a little bit about each battle suit type. So the first one is the pilot battle suit. So I'm just going to talk about it, but we're not going to get too long about it. This is a small standard armor sized suit. It has the code XV02. So it's size 0. And that's the thing you'll see in all of these naming schemes is the higher that first number goes, the bigger the mech, because it's about their size class. So because this is the same size as a piece of armor, it's size 0. But it's meant to assist in piloting it in things like hammerheads so that they can almost kind of have this, like, direct link to the machine, almost like battle suits. So instead of needing, like, 3 guys to operate a hammerhead like you normally would, this way you only need 1. This, however, is currently only being used and tested by Long Strike. So the Tau actually kind of take their testing and working before they go into, you know, mass production very seriously. They very much will, like, ensure that this has seen plenty of field data before deciding.
We love
right.
A good quality assurance team.
Yep, exactly. So... this is so Long Strike is a Shasla who was one of the most decorated tank aces and inevitably was the perfect subject for such thing. All right. And then next up then is the stealth suits.
Ooh.
So these suits emit a holographic disruption field, making them very difficult to target and rendering them almost invisible to the naked eye. You know, still generally will often have jetpacks, kind of like other, you know, and the upcoming battle suits that we will talk about. The pilot one didn't, but these will. So this is like the first of them that will. You know, so they'll have some way to be able to move in. But there are a couple of different types of stealth suits. So we're going to start with the XV-15, which you see here. This is the standard Fire Warrior style armor almost, but it has extra plating and more support systems for their slightly larger weapons. So it's, if anything, kind of just like a maybe slightly stealthier Terminator, you know, to like the Space Marine. But
okay.
If anything, realistically, from a size perspective, this is maybe like the Space Marine size to the normal Tau, like, which would be the size of almost like a human person, you know, like a guardsman.
Mm-hmm.
And then a very common stealth suit that you'll see, especially in the game, in the tabletop, then is the XV-25 battle suits. And these are a stage larger and are equipped with a fusion cannon, as well as getting an extra support system, which this can either be better stabilization, a drone controller, homing beacon, target locks, shield generator. Kind of just depends on what the loadout that you feel is necessary for the mission you're on. But these very much kind of fit that maybe Terminator size, but in reality, they're probably actually a little bit bigger than a Terminator.
Okay.
But these, you know, these similarly can go almost complete stealth. They, you know, they're like, it's kind of that like chameleon-esque though invisibility where like, if you could see the warble, you know?
Yeah. Is it a thing of like, are they sort of blending, like, are they visibly blending into their surroundings like a chameleon, or is it like they're literally vanishing? Like, how does that sort of represent itself?
Yeah, it's kind of like that Predator invisible that, you know, from like the movie, where, you know, like if you catch it just in the right angle or something, you might be able to see that like little bit of like
the outline
part of their, you know, the curvature or like where the, you know, where they turn or whatever. But like, especially like when they're still or if they're moving fast enough, because these can move very fast and quietly, you very well may easily miss it. And they obviously then won't show up. They've set themselves so they don't show up on especially generally very common radar system.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, there is technically a different kind of similarly sized stealth suit called the XV-22. And this is currently worn and tested by Shadow Sun. And these were actually originally meant to replace the XV-15s, but they were proven to be very hard to produce versus the 25. So, but these are able to wield two fusion blasters, and at least with Shadow Sun have also the multiple support systems and a little bit more compared to the 25. But again, what kind of ended up being seemingly the case was this was very hard to actually get going on a large scale development cycle, but the 25s are easier to produce. So while maybe they're a little bit more clunky in comparison and you can have more weapons on this stealth suit, it's a little bit harder. So they're continuing the tests with Shadow Sun, but inherently she has proven herself many times to be more than capable of wielding this this suit. And they'll like, in the, you know, the second that they get that opportunity, they'll probably switch over to it still, I imagine. Because I imagine this is still better than the 25.
Is Shadow Sun the only one that they're doing these tests on? I got to imagine that there's like multiple.
No, they often really only test it with a person, like seemingly one person. As far as I've ever seen, whenever they do these tests, like it's like, you know, Longstrike is the only one testing the pilot suit. You know, Shadow Sun is the only one testing this, you know, this suit. So that seems to be the case. I mean, I haven't seen anything that kind of contradicts that, because Shadow Sun's really been the only one that they've ever shown wearing this suit. And they never implicated that anybody else is. Otherwise, next up, my favorite one of this bunch, and it's the biggest, the XV-95, the Ghost Keel battle suit. Yes, the largest stealth suit.
Big jump in numbers.
Yep. This was made in the third sphere of expansion. So essentially like their third time being like, we're going to conquer more worlds and bring them into the greater good.
Third time's the charm, you know?
And not only that, but three times the height of a space marine. This generates a stealth field with its stealth drones equipped with a fusion collider or a cyclic ion raker. And nice. Otherwise also two fusion blasters on top, just for good measure.
Oh, yeah.
This Shastvari pilot, though, is also supported by an integrated AI system. And this, what's kind of cool about this, you know, like story-wise, is that, like, because, like, they're a stealth unit, right? Like, they are used to being often in the battlefield by themselves. They end up kind of forming a pretty tight bond with this AI, as they kind of often find themselves alone in the battlefield together and will sometimes almost seclude themselves purposefully just to hang out with each other. Because
I see no way that that could possibly go wrong.
I mean, this is part of the thing to remember, too, is that kind of like with the Votan as well, Tau have a very symbiotic relationship with AI. You know, their drones are all controlled by AI. They've plenty of their ships have AI systems and assistants and all that. Just seemingly the AI they have also is willing to believe in the greater good. So they really, I mean, I'm sure there's a point or whatever where, like, maybe they will reach a similar problem that the humans did with their AI, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we're not there yet. You know, because that's the thing to remember, too, is like the Tau are still a very young species when it comes to the greater universe of 40K, right? That's why a lot of people, you know, had kind of negative feelings on the Tau, because they're like, well, everything about them is good. And it's like, yes, because they're young and innocent as a species. They haven't had their fall yet, their hit, their punch to the nuts, if you will.
Right.
So, and I mean, technically, humanity's had two. That's some pretty good showing of tenacity, I do have to say. But, I mean, like, you know, humanity had the first one. That was with their, you know, that was with their AI revolt. So there's nothing to say that they won't either. But there's also a bit showing that they treat their AI with probably a little more respect than the humans did. Otherwise, let's get into our bread and butter when it comes to battle suits. So let's start off with the classic XV-8 battle suit.
Oh, look at the little guy.
Yeah, so actually, and you'll see this in models too. They do look a little bit shorter. And obviously some of this comes from this model is a little bit older. You know, this is the one that's been around since the beginning, right?
Okay.
I mean, granted, they weren't in plastic at that point, but they kept the scale relatively similar, probably a little bigger, but not by much. But XVA battle suits are worn by the Fire Warriors that have passed that trial by fire. And so are at minimum a Shasui. And, you know, they're this classic design. You know, these standard Shasui suits are going to be usually smaller than the other commander units. So, like, they will remain smaller, even if they maybe do an update or whatever to these at some point in time. There shouldn't ever be to the size of their commanding suits that kind of go above this, you know, because they're kind of meant to still be that bit smaller, but they're still very mobile. You know, they still have jump packs and, you know, these kind of flight packs to help them. They can, you know, soar through the skies, move in and out through battle very as quickly as they can. They just might be slightly clunkier compared to some of the more commandery battle suits above them, you know?
Okay.
Otherwise, they can have a variety of weapons, such as this kind of minigun-esque type weapon, or up to, you know, up to plasma and fusion weapons on top of that. And then, obviously, they have their drone pals as well. I mean, everybody will have drone pals, though. Otherwise, next up, we have the Enforcer suit. So, this is the XV-8-05. So, it's roughly similar. It's just slightly taller, but generally pretty much the same as the XV-8. It just has that little bit of height and a little bit of extra command systems. They are extra advanced systems. Sorry. So, just like, you know, this kind of very, like, there technically still could be that. I mean, like, here, for example, you can kind of actually see that this technically, let me make sure, is this technically is a Shasui that we're looking at, because The whole head is the general armor color, so it's that yellow. But they just have the white accent on the head. They don't really have it on the sensor vein, but like I said, they're not all, it's like not a perfect system. But like that's kind of what we're seeing here, right? This is a good example of that. Otherwise, the kind of good step up here then is the XV86.
So this is the kind of the more pancake head.
They're all, the head situation. Part is pretty much the same. It's just kind of the art here. The big difference with them is that they have, did I say enforcer suit? I meant to say Cold Star suit, if I didn't say that correctly the first time. This is the Cold Star battle suit, which is similar to the enforcer. I just may have read the name wrong. Sorry. But the XV86 is correct. But yeah, so they use a number of extra aerodynamic fins, as well as a more advanced targeting system. So not only makes it harder to track and evade, but it makes it hard for you to evade because it's really good at being able to shoot and hit while moving.
Gotcha.
So it's a similar size to the Enforcer suit, right? It is... I think model-wise, I think the technically are the same kit. You can either build it as an Enforcer suit or the Cold Star. It's been a while since I built that kit, so I may not be remembering that entirely correct, but I believe that is the case. But the big thing about them, yeah, is the extra maneuverability. The Cold Star suit is way more focused, or has way more potential to, wave dash your way into a fight or from a fight.
Yeah.
And especially in the Tau's case, from a fight. Otherwise, finally, we've got the XV-88. This is the broadside. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm one step behind here. So this is the Cold Star. I think I had an extra slide in there that I intended to have.
Oh.
My bad, but these are some close-ups on them. So you can really see the fins here, though, right? There's just, this clear extra level of, aerodynamics. But the broadside... takes the main crisis suit and exchanges the backpack for heavier weapons and armor. So kind of like your gun cannon to Gundam, you know?
Yep.
They use a heavy rail rifle or missile pods, or in some cases maybe, as well as more plasma rifles or seeker missiles to just kind of be almost, not maybe necessarily be the short range artillery, but kind of like how you would put a standard tank, in the back line of an army where it's, still shooting a very long range, but it's not specifically trying to arc the shot, as far. It's still going to move up and kind of move with the front lines, This just isn't about going fast, so it doesn't have the jump pack to be able to quickly dash around. They're just, we're going to kind of just walk our way in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one ahead there. So they, these do have, there's you will see in a model, especially that they're a little bit bigger than, it might be about a similar size to the Cold Star. But they're definitely bigger than the actual XV-8, but they are not by as much, right? They're not crazy big. They're big, just not crazy big.
Yeah.
Maybe about the similar size as a Redemptor Dreadnought, maybe.
It's more so about the heavy artillery that they pack.
Yeah, and the rail gun is a crazy just . I mean, it's a rail gun,
It's a rail gun, yeah, exactly.
It's everything you think when you think rail gun. I mean, it's a rail rifle, but it's similar. It's just a slightly less powerful rail gun. We'll get to the one that has the full-ass rail gun in a second. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's the broadside. So there is technically the hazard close support, but I... So technically in lore, these are some of the newest suits deployed, but they were only Forge World models and have little when it comes to lore or other discussion and aren't even currently purchasable.
If you could buy some Forge World things still. That was a while ago already, right?
Well, some Forge World things are still out there, right? Like, especially in Horus Heresy, but like in other scenarios too. Like, if you want to buy a Titan, that's still technically Forge World, and they sell Titans still. You know, when I was at Adepticon, there are a number of boxes labeled for Forge World, right?
Okay.
But it's definitely on its way out, right? It's not, they're not making new ones likely. At least not like anything crazy. And 40K seemingly less so. If they're building new resin models, if anything, they're for like Horus Heresy, like I said. So I don't really expect these to come back anytime soon. So, but they're technically in the lore, so I just figured I'd bring it up. These are large. These inherently in lore, though, are very large suits, so bigger than the ones we talked about previously, but very difficult to produce. So, and, you know, because it's kind of like a counterattack unit, so it's like a meant to like kind of be a bit in the fray. A lot of Tau view it as anti-Tau. You know, like they think it kind of betrays their methodology of war. But a lot of pilots who have actually been in the things supposedly love it.
Hey, this is like, actually pretty great. You guys should try this out.
Like, yeah, this is fun. I get to be up in the thick of it. Let's go. You know, like but that's it. That's really all we have on it. There really isn't much else for it. If a book has this that isn't by you know who, then I'd love to know in the comments. But otherwise, yeah, as far as I know, it's just kind of here. But let's get the ones that are, you know, more properly around here. Let's talk about the Riptide.
Ooh.
Yes. So this is the only one of these that you can still get in these 10. We're going to talk about 10 class suits. And the Riptide is the only one that you can still get as a model, but it is twice the size of the XV-8.
Okay.
But despite its size, it is still quite fast and agile. So unlike the broadside where they kind of took off the jetpack stuff, they kept it on here. So they kind of let this be a bit more maneuverable, big unit. And this has the is either armed with a heavy burst cannon or an ion accelerator. And then also comes with a Riptide shield cannon.
Yeah.
So if and fun fact, ion accelerators fire boulder size, you know, anything but the metric system, am I right?
Boulder size.
Yeah. That's always described. Anything but the metric system, you know?
That's like 12 rocks if you account for inflation.
But these boulder-sized balls of ion that leave a burning trail behind them and can blow up a rhino, the tank, with one shot.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oops. And they, in relation to the XV-86, they're like more, would you say they're like more maneuverable, less maneuverable?
Compared to the XV-8, they're definitely going to be less maneuverable. But they're more maneuverable than the broadside. So they do kind of get the benefit of having a bit of best of both worlds, but they're still going to be pretty slow. What I don't know, because I'm not super crazy about, you know, or I don't know a whole lot about the data sheets, I don't know if the gun necessarily packs better or similar punch, but also obviously we're talking about game balance things that change that. So I don't really know where, you know, these kind of from like a firepower perspective, where the Riptide sits in conjunction to the broadside. Another great comment would be helpful there. But as far as I could gauge, kind of based on especially what it would be like for doing game balance, my guess is probably broadside is better firepower, but then this is that bit of extra firepower above an XV-8. You know, any of the rest of the XV-8 series, mm-hmm. You know, Cold Star down. Otherwise, there is the Ravarna and Yavara, but they are less known, had a supposedly a very limited model range, and are also no longer available. And I didn't even have any like art of this, so like GW didn't have any art of this, so like here we are. But these were supposedly an upgrade to the Riptide and Shock Assault suits, respectively. They're there. I want to just mention them so somebody wasn't like, you forgot the... We're, you know, here we are. But, yeah, I mean, these are definitely just that bit more maneuverable, but still have a pretty good chunk of firepower. And I mean, you can see in this image, like, this is a, you know, this is a Riptide next to Shadow Sun, you know?
Gotcha.
Pretty big. You know what's bigger, though? Ballistic suits.
Yeah.
So akin to walking tanks, these suits trade maneuverability. Yeah,
don't say.
For overwhelming firepower. Obviously, these are mainly used to fight like super heavy tanks and titans. So they're kind of meant to balance like when the Tau are very outnumbered. They're kind of meant to be that like, well, this will even the odds, you know?
More thing. Of a last resort type thing or a
little bit, yeah. And so the Storm Surge or the KV-128 is obviously the largest non-Forge World unit available to the Tau. I don't remember if the Manta is Forge World or not. We're going to talk about that in a moment, but it again, like essentially the realistic big model that you are going to use on the tabletop if you wanted to, right? Like,
right.
This is the realistic one. You will not get the other ones. But, yeah, it's obviously visually known for generally lacking arms, but instead, you know, also exclusively having what I could only call a, what's the proper measurement here? Oh, a metric shit ton of missiles on each side. And then as well as its pulse driver or arc cannon.
Okay.
Yeah, like some pretty meaty weapons. And I mean, this thing's meant to fight a Titan or Titan-like thing. So like, it's got to have some juice to it, you know?
Right.
But that being said, yeah, I mean, the pulse driver uses a particle accelerator to blast plasma over these great distances. Yeah, like the thing we always talk about, like, it's like, oh, it's going to find the God particle. The tower, like, what if we used it to
they just
shoot
have those.
Our enemies?
Yeah, we got like 4 or 5 of those in the back. What if we just, like,
let's just
slap
launch
that
it at someone? Like me when I'm about to stare, when I'm staring down the barrel of an arc cannon or the pulse driver. Yeah, I mean, they also have the aggressive reactive charge cannon, which will hyper accelerate plasma to emit a negatively charged particle beam to a target to, you know, obviously blow up the shit out of it. Which is generally kind of the result of these types of weapons, you know, to
that sounds like it'll
blow the
it.
Shit out of it.
Yeah.
So Storm Surge are so big that they are delivered by the Tau Manta. I alluded to this. The model for the Tau Manta is so big that you can play
how
a full
big
game
is
of
it?
Kill Team on it.
Oh, okay.
Like,
it's like an aircraft
carrier.
You can
use this as a board.
Yeah, like, it's like an aircraft carrier where it's just like,
it's huge,
the size of a small town.
The Manta's giant. I mean, like the like from a model to model size, like the Manta is crazy bigger than the Storm Surge. But like, it makes sense then like how these are, because these aren't delivered by like, you know, them just like hanging off the bottom of them, you know, like by straps, and they like drop them. They have to walk off the Manta. So like they go inside the Manta. So that means the Manta has to be gigantic. But next up, and kind of the last of our ballistic suits here, is the KX-139 or the Taunar. I think I might have misspelled this. I don't think I spelled this correctly. I think it might have to be Supremacy Armor. I think I just missed an M. I spelt this too incorrectly for it not to be Supremacy. Cause I missed an M.
Supremacy?
Yeah, that's how I wrote it, and I think it's supposed to be Supremacy. Because
I mean, that sounds cool too.
Everything else is wrong. But yeah, so this is the remaining Forge World Titan-sized unit that is available to buy. Obviously, don't. But it is primarily a defensive unit for especially threats that the Tau have not yet encountered. So, like, especially often used when a Sept or something hasn't, like, dealt with or seen these giant tyrannid beasts, you know?
Can I tell you, because I figure at the end of this episode, you're probably going to ask something akin, just because you've done it previously, of like, so what was the most interesting thing to you about learning about like this topic, this episode, you know, yeah. which battle suit kind of speaks to you? I can't tell you the like thrill that went through my body when you told me that these suits are designed for threats they haven't met yet. The idea of like, we're going to build a mech suit based on our fear of what's out there.
Yeah.
Is astounding. It's like the way that we build, or that they like design conceptual submersibles for like going to the very bottom of the ocean, because we have no idea what's technically down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
That is, I mean, that's the thing. That's the most 40K thing about them. It's crazy. Because like, they, like I mentioned, they're a young, naive, you know, untraveled species, you know? Like, hold on. I gotta pull up, you say naive,
but it also, I feel like it comes from a lack of naivete, where it's them being, like, being able to recognize and appreciate, like, there are things out there we have not met yet that could probably, like, decimate us in a second.
Oh, so well, I mean, yes.
We have to, like, over-prepare. We have to go above and beyond and look at every star in the sky and be like, that could be a potential enemy that wipes out our entire human race. Or Tau race.
Yes. Like, let's look at this map, right? This is a big universe map, you know? And it doesn't obviously cover every planet, you know, in... This doesn't cover like every planet in the known galaxy of 40K, right? But it covers a good chunk of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you're not seeing the planets, right? That every planet exists of, you know. It's just like they're just meant to be like within the giant space, you know. Like it's just many, many, many tiny dots, right? Look into that bottom right corner there. So, like, you see all of these named planets, right? These are all part of Imperial space. We're essentially, like, this whole map is Imperial space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you notice how, like, the Tau Empire is that tiny hexagon in the bottom corner?
Yeah, the little honeycomb right there. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole ass Tau Empire right there. So we've got all this shit and the tower that. So to say that it's like they very much don't know everything that they could face is an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
When they think that they need something to face things that they don't know what could happen, they mean it.
Yeah. There is an awareness of how small their empire is in relation to the rest of the of known space.
Yeah, because they know. I mean, they know relatively that. I mean, they don't know maybe by how much, but they like know that the Imperium is a gigantic thing, and that's also why then they don't feel deterred. For example, like the Tau have a list of like, do not try diplomacy with these people. It just won't work. We've tried it too many times. And it has never worked. Don't try it.
Don't get fooled again.
Yes. And, you know, one of them is the Space Marines, right? They'll see Space Marines and they're like, all right, nope. Unless they come to us with friendly tides, don't try it. Just shoot. But if they just
if they're coming to us, there's a 50-50 chance it's they're coming to us to wipe us out. So
yes, or betray us. So keep an eye out for that.
Yep.
You know, they might be allies of convenience now, but they will turn on us.
Yeah.
And so like the. But if they go to like an Imperial world, just a regular Imperial world, and they see there's just normal humans there, no Space Marines to be found, then all of a sudden, maybe they're like, all right, let's talk this out. We've got this concept called the greater good. You in? So that's the big thing. It's like they don't like completely just turn off to anything Imperium, but they do know like Imperium's pretty big, you know, and they own a lot of space. So we know that then there's a lot that we can kind of squeeze our way into, maybe unnoticed. But yeah, otherwise, like I said, these are otherwise used for like defeating large Tyranid beasts and just probably anything else. I mean, honestly, if an orc rock was heading towards the planet, they'd probably fire a bunch of these at them, if I had to guess.
Sure.
And if you, I don't know if we talked about this, an orc rock is effectively a moon that the orcs will just launch into a planet, and it will explode with many orcs. The orcs that survive go and crump.
It just keeps getting better.
I know.
Cause now that's like that's like the setup and then punchline of like, yeah, no, most people, realistically, you don't anticipate your enemy having a moon as a weapon to use against you.
That's also their spaceship.
So it's like, yeah, no, the Tau are really onto something with this, as like, insane as it is.
Yeah.
They're so thoroughly correct to,
to have this thought.
To do this.
Yes, absolutely. No, there's no denying that. Having conceptually this being your like defensive, we don't know what that is, shoot it weapon, and it be their biggest one. Total sense. Makes total
imagine
sense.
Imagine if future Link in Ocarina of Time stops like trying to gather the pieces of the Triforce and instead starts building like a gigantic robot, and everybody's like, why are you doing that? What's the point of that for? What about Ganondorf?
What about,
he's like,
you
no,
Tears
you don't understand. You don't understand. There's a giant moon that's gonna crash into Termina over the course of 3 days. We have to build something that's prepared for that. And everybody's like, what the hell's Termina? What are you talking about? None of what you're saying makes any sense. And he's like, trust me, in like 2 years, you're going to get it. You're going to understand.
But yes, so, you know, as I kind of mentioned, you know, you'll have the suits themselves, though, just kind of extra generic stuff to finish this off. They come with their own drones. And I know we skipped a few suits that exist in the lore, but, and like I said, that doesn't mean that I don't know they exist or whatever. It's just they're not used in the game, or they really don't come up all that often. It's just not worth talking about when we have a time limit, you know?
Sure. This is an XV-805 we're looking at right here, correct?
This is either just an XV-8 or, yeah, could be an 05. Okay. Could be an Enforcer.
Going off of the yellow color scheme.
That is just based on, I forget what sept that is. It's the old default sept.
Gotcha.
So it's, yeah, because no, I mean, this is the chapter. This is, you know, this is the space. The septs are like the Space Marine chapter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, yeah, so let's see. What is which?
We established this several episodes back that I'm very fond of the colors yellow and blue.
Yes, which you absolutely could just do, you know? I mean, you can always make your own sept and just do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is not the right sept. Yeah, I mean, it might...
This is not my beautiful sept.
It might be Kais. Let me double check here. It should be part of either the first sphere or something like that. Ooh, I don't remember. This used to be like the default, though. That was kind of the big thing, right? Is that okay. It was like
it was the meta B. Yeah.
This was the color on the box.
Sure.
Now it's Viorla. That I know. Oh, is it this one? Hold on. Can I get colors? No, it is not that one. I'm going to want to find this answer. It's going to bother me if I don't know. So bear with me. This will get cut out, so it's fine.
Okay.
No one will need to know that I'm spending all this time trying to figure out what freaking sept.
But then it'll be double embarrassing if you don't cut this out, and it includes the...
Yeah, I forget. I don't notice it. It includes
you saying, I'm totally going to cut this out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a colony, is it? That'd be weird if, like, the former poster child was, like, a colony. Or, no way, is this, like, the color of, like, Tau, the former Holdworld? It is. So this, the yellow and white, is, like, the... is like the sept color, quote unquote, but obviously it's the Tau homeworld color scheme.
Very cool. Okay.
Yes. Now it makes more sense. But yes, now you'll generally see it's the like white and red, like the armor color is white, but technically I guess that makes the sept color red. Because the red is the accent color, and their accept color is always kind of the lesser seen, or like the, you know, what we would call an accent color.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so like, I do wish that, I mean, there is at least the relatively recent Tau literature that's actually good. So I think it was I can't remember if it was last year or the end of 23. But the book Elemental Council was released, by Noah Van Nguyen, Nguyen. It has been very well received by anybody who seemingly read it in the 40K community. So that's always good. We love that, because they have an unfortunate history of, Phil Kelly, really hating the Tau, but being the primary author for the series.
Great.
Yeah. But if you ever wish to know, I did find a lovely list online of good Tau novels and novellas. There's actually a full Tau reading list that goes even further. There's actually even an audio drama, but the ones that were recommended there's a novella called The Arkanasha War by Andy Chambers. There's a novella called The Broken Sword by Guy Haley. Mm-hmm. Elemental Council by Noah Van Nguyen that we just talked about. Firecast by Peter Fehervari. Yeah, that's... I wrote that right. I said that right. Sure. Technically, Firecast, it does note, though, is part of a series of books called Outcast, Sanctuary of Worms, and Firecast. Mm. So that might want some prior reading, because Firecast is technically the third of that trilogy. Okay. But there's also then the book Fire and Ice by Peter Fehervari. Fire Warrior. Fire Warrior by Simon Spurrier. It is noted in this reading list, the granddaddy of Tau novels, a must read. So apparently they're a good one to think about.
Okay.
Kill cool. Team, Star next to a Last Chancer's novel by Gav Thorpe. I wonder if part of that came out with the original Chancers. Release of Kill Team, because uh-huh. original Kill Team launch was like Imperium versus Tau, and supposedly I've been told that the first edition of Kill Team was like pretty like it was like pretty good for doing like narrative stuff, but you know, I don't know, I didn't play it back then, and I don't know anybody that knows of the rules and could show me what it was like, but I'm pretty okay with where it's at now. Regardless, then finally we have Shadow Sun, Last Line of Kiru, by Braden Campbell. Don't get that confused with Shadow Sun, The Patient Hunter by Phil Kelly.
Different things.
Different. This is a novella. But there's a lot more. This reading, I've just found this, you know, I found this list through the Tau subreddit, so I'm willing to trust them because, like, no one else is going there. That is for the Tau fan who needs help. Like, I've got nothing. I don't know any lore. They don't advertise anything. You know, the Tau battle suits in the board game are just as pivotal as they are in lore. You know, they battle suits in the game have been very wonky lately. I really, though, my note is I really want some way for, like, maybe one XV8 or maybe stealth suits to show up in Kill Team. I really, really want it. I want it so much. We got it with the Tyranids. My Tyranids are coming to Kill Team, and they're going to have a five operative squad, you know? So, like, we could find a way, I feel like, just to get, like, one standard XV8, you know, or one stealth battle suit. I mean, I don't really know the, like, answer. Because, like, when I posed this question to Kill Team folk at Adepticon, one of the things that they asked, which I thought was, like, a really good question, because it's a good baseline kind of for Kill Team, right? Because, you know, the Space Marine teams, so Chaos Space Marines and any normal Space Marine teams alike, anything that's a Space Marine team, Imperial or not, have six operatives, right? So six models. And so one of the thoughts is obviously, like, you know, if something can 1v1 a Space Marine, then that gives you a relative idea of maybe where it's, how many should exist and where its power levels are. Because, like, a Space Marine can one shot or, like, kill another Space Marine in one fight if the rolls are good enough, right?
Yeah.
But if something can't do that, even at its best rolls, then it needs more models in the unit, right? And if it can, and if it didn't need all the rolls, then maybe it needs to have less, you know? So maybe, like, the Tyranids have five, which is less than seemingly the old minimum of two. Or of two, of six. I don't know why I said two. But what I don't know is, from a lore perspective, I don't know if an XV8 and a Space Marine fought each other, how, like, the who would win in that scenario really would go. Because I feel like the power levels of Space Marines change over the course of lore for so much. And that hasn't happened as much, I feel like, with Tau. Like, the XV8s never, I felt like, got more technically intimidating, you know? I mean, yes, if you think of the tabletop, a unit of battle suits come in a squad of three versus a minimum squad of five for Space Marines. So I don't know the answer properly. My thought, and I mean, you don't know a whole lot about Kill Team yet, so take it as you will. My belief, though, is that I think a really fun type of Kill Team would be one of two things. I think two Kill Teams could be really awesome, but help bring suits into Kill Team. And that would be one XV8. I mean, you could just have a Kill Team that's three XV8s, but that might be too small of a number. Or one XV8 and a group of maybe, like, just stronger Fire Warriors. Like, just Fire Warriors that are better than a normal, like, Pathfinder. Or a stealth suit, like a full X-25 stealth suit, and then the rest are XV-15 stealth suits as, like, the remaining five. That's my pitch. I'm throwing it out there. Take it as you will, Dylan.
No, I'll take your word for it on it.
I think that'd be fun, though. I think the stealth suit one probably is the most realistic, though. Especially because XV-15s, I don't think they really have a kit out there right now. I think it's because I think the only stealth, the smallest stealth suit you can get are the standard, like the XV-25. Because I think part of it's supposed to be lore-wise that like the Tau kind of put the XV-15 out of favor. But the GW now owned, wasn't originally owned, but now is, short, the Exodite has most of the stealth team with XV-15s, and they're being led by a 25. So, we got some precedent.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have some fun, GW. Come on.
Let us have a little fun.
Just give us some suits and kill team. I want it. It's all I want. Anyway, that pretty much does it for this episode. I mean, you already talked about your clear love for the KX-139.
As soon as you described it, there was nothing was gonna. That's why I brought it up, because I was like, nothing's gonna beat this. Nothing's gonna top this.
Okay, but out of the models that you would realistically be able to buy, like in paint, right? That you could build, like buy, build, and paint, right? What one from that perspective? What is the one that you would like to have as a model?
Probably a Cold Star.
The Cold Star?
If I'm being honest, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, conceptually, like, for what a Cold Star is, you know, like, the, like, from a lore perspective especially, like, you know, just this, like, high-flying.
That one on the right there, that's.
That's just, like, the high-flying, fast-moving.
Yep.
That's good. Technically the first model I built was the sample Space Marine I got at the GW store, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the first real model that I built, like the first kit, let's put it that way, the first kit where I could actually choose and make decisions on what I put together in the kit, I would make different decisions now. Was a Cold Star battle suit though. And I painted it like Farsight Enclave, and I love it. And it is such a cool model, and it's such a cool piece of 40K lore, and I love it. So I agree. But otherwise, anything you had questions on about the rest of the battle suits here?
I suppose if I have any remaining questions, it would be, have they ever considered making a larger battle suit out of multiple smaller battle suits? Like if they took a few XV-8s and gave them the ability to like combine into something the size of like an XV-88.
Yeah. What could you be referring to?
I just feel like that'd be like an interesting concept, because they're going to run out of numbers eventually. We've established this is like a numbers-based system where like the bigger the number, the larger the battle suit. Eventually, they're going to hit like a hard cap. So once that happens, I feel like they're going to have to take the existing numbers and start mashing them together.
Right. I mean, there is definitely a realm for where that number system and everything could go. I mean, if we learned anything from how AMD and Intel have set their model numbers over the many years, you know, there is always the argument that you could just add more numbers. But regardless, I don't foresee the whole Voltron thing. It just doesn't, I don't know. It's more in the realm that, like, Tau are really all about, like, or especially, like, they really enjoy their efficiency. I feel like the capacity for them to, like, morph and combine together is semi-counterintuitive to that. Because you don't have that time on the battlefield, like, realistically.
You only have so many seconds to do like a cool transformation sequence with its own theme music and
yeah, before the
cool transitions and
Yeah, before the Lehman Russ fires its giant plasma cannon at you.
Like, they're halfway through the process of transforming, and then just an orc just, like, barrels them down. Just an orc moon is just tossed at them and wipes them out.
Or not even that, just, like, a freaking Morkanaut just royal, yeah. like, rolls in and just, like...
it just steam rolls over him.
Boom! This giant punch to the fucking... center mass of whatever the wherever they are in the morphing mm-hmm. sequence. Yeah, I feel like would be a tough go. But I think that's partly kind of maybe the type of thinking though from a design perspective that got them to some of their bigger, you know, models. Like, hey, let's take the Cold Star, or no, let's take the XV8, you know. Let's take the backpack off and add a bigger gun and just give it a little bit of extra stabilization. All right, cool. We got a broadside. All right, well, we have the broadside. Let's maybe, you know, if we can add some of the extra parts from the Cold Star to help give it some extra boost, maybe we can get it to be a little bit more maneuverable and just only a slightly, you know, less heavy weapon. All right. Let's make that. Okay, cool. Now we've got, you know, the Riptide. Like, I feel like there's definitely points where, like, you can get to the, like, that. I think that line of thinking is what got them to where they are.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of making them combinable, that I don't foresee. That'd be a horrid model to make, too. To, like, not be able to put it together and not break it. With the way that, like, modeling works.
Yeah.
That'd be a nightmare. That'd get broken so fast. But, yeah, otherwise, that's about it. Unless you had any other questions about the battle suits?
Nope. They're cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, that's when you're like, do you think you'd be interested in Tau? Maybe. What are they like? Tau battle suit. It's just like, all right. Yeah, you got me. It's the fact that they're like blue cow people is like a tertiary thing.
Yeah.
But otherwise, that'll do for this episode then. Next week, we'll get into something hobby related. Where we've kind of gone a few lore episodes in a row, technically, even including the Gundam one. So that was like an origin story. And we, even though we talked a bit about Gunpla in that, but yeah,
mm-hmm.
We'll get into some hobby stuff next time. So tune in for that, and hopefully, we'll see you there.
Goodbye.